Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Why so grumpy?
Oh, it was horrible.
What happened?
I got up. Well, so last night, you know, so let's start at the beginning, Michael. So, you know, I like to make the coffee the night before.
Oh, Lord.
And so I was in the kitchen last night and making a coffee. And you got to wash out the carafe. Which I
definitely.
I put a little soap in the carafe there.
Yeah. Let the water run through it.
Yes. Yeah. Got my coffee in there, and then you fill up the carafe with the cold water, and then you pour it in the coffee maker. I'm pouring the water in the coffee maker, and I see that the water coming out the bottom of the carafe. Well, the carafe has gotten broken. It's got a crack in it, and the water's coming out. And I thought, So, ingeniously, I developed a fix for the problem I had.
It sort of be good.
And originally I was going to use Saran wrap, but I thought that might melt, you know, because it's hot on the, you know. So I created a little funnel that I put on the bottom of the coffee pot, the carafe, and so that whatever little bit of coffee might leak out would just drain right into the sink. I had a little foil.
Nice.
Aluminum foil running right into
regular
the sink.
Regular old Bob Vila.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like it's a small crack, a little coffee's going to spill, but I just run this funnel right then. Genius. Brilliant.
Okay. And?
So I got up this morning, and, you know, it's early. I get up early because it takes me a while to kind of get moving.
Start that engine.
Yeah, yeah. It's a, you know, finely tuned machine over here. So I hit the button on the coffee pot, and I start doing my morning routine. I get a bowl of cereal down, and smell of coffee smells good. Uh-huh. And waiting for that sucker, and 5 minutes later.
Yep.
There's coffee everywhere, Michael.
Oh, boy.
There's no coffee in the carafe.
And so none into a cup either,
no,
right?
No, it's, like, it's wasn't all over the kitchen.
Well, what would make you think that glass, you were going to be able to hold your liquid into glass with aluminum foil,
well,
John?
I wasn't going to hold all of it. I just needed to hold enough for a cup in there.
So why didn't you hold a cup underneath the...
Because the button's got to be pushed. Uh-huh. If you don't, you got to have the carafe that holds up the button that lets the coffee flow through. This is why I don't trust other people to make these kind of home improvements. But I failed. And I told my wife that I failed, and she reminded me. She said, it's like the time. Remember when it snowed a month or two ago?
Yeah.
And that snow, and
that surprise one when everybody told us that wasn't going to happen?
Yeah. I went out and I shoveled the driveway.
Attaboy.
And, but I had a little patch of ice there that I couldn't quite get to, and my father-in-law comes over, and we don't want him to slide on the ice. So my fix for that was, you know, it's 10 degrees outside.
Uh-huh.
My fix for that was to pour hot water on the ice.
I have lost elections to this guy. I have literally lost elections to this man.
Creating an actual larger patch of ice eventually than the little ice I was trying to eradicate. She reminded me of that this morning. So, you know, I'm not so good around the house. And I've had no coffee, and I'm not happy.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was happy this week. I did something really cool.
What?
Something we don't have in St. Louis.
Oh, because you were out of town, of
yes,
course.
There was...
Unbelievable.
We don't have the NFL, no. But I've been to an NFL game.
Yeah.
I went to my first NBA basketball game.
Oh.
And let me just tell you now, I'm converted.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm one of these people who doesn't really care for the NBA on television until it's playoff time.
Nor do I.
Playoff time, I'll pay attention because they play defense. But I was in Denver at the beginning of the week, which, by the way, that city's just blowing up, man.
Yeah.
It'll depress you to leave St. Louis.
A lot going
on
in Denver.
Yeah, lots. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Denver Nuggets game. They also happen to have the best player in basketball right now, a guy named Jokic.
Oh, yeah.
Jokic or something like that. How do I say it? It's like Jokic.
Jokic is a tennis player.
Jokic. Yeah, well, anyway, the guy's incredible.
Luka.
And he was playing that.
We don't know.
Yeah,
nobody.
Luka Jokic, something like that. And they were playing Toronto. But let me just tell you right now, brother.
Sports voice of St. Louis.
Well, we don't have an NBA team here.
We do not.
So that's where I'm going, is we should.
We should.
And let me just tell you, the most entertaining live sport to me prior to the other day was NHL hockey.
Hockey.
Because hockey's nonstop, right?
Yeah.
Basketball, holy cow. Dude, there's lots of timeouts and stuff, but there's always something going on around you and happening on the you know, people are trying half-court shots for $500,000 and they're playing what? Games and then they're bringing the team back out. I'm telling you, I had a blast at the NBA game. I bet you would have a blast at the NBA
Here's
game.
Here's my problem with
I
the
wish
NBA.
We had the NBA in St. Louis.
Well, we did have.
The Spirits.
The Hawks.
That didn't go well.
The St. Louis Hawks. The no, they Spirits left were them. In the ABA.
Okay, the Hawks became Atlanta team, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
They moved in 1950-something.
You starting to see a pattern with St. Louis sports here?
What?
Should we wager on where our teams will go next? I mean, because it seems like everybody leaves.
The Blues almost went to Saskatoon.
Saskatoon, that thriving metropolis.
Yeah.
Could you imagine had we lost a team to Saskatoon?
The Saskatoon Blues.
At least we lost a football team to the second biggest city in the country. But to lose a hockey team to Saskatoon?
Well, we didn't lose.
What, are we going to lose our baseball team to Tulsa? I mean,
well, we've already got a team in Tulsa.
They have an. I can't wait to hear about the Major League Baseball team in Tulsa.
No,
John.
There's a minor league team in Tulsa.
Well, yeah, but there's also high school volleyball down there you could go watch. Who cares? It's all about the pros.
It's kind of like the NBA for me. Here's a problem with the NBA.
Okay.
The last 2 minutes of an NBA game,
it's what matters.
Yeah.
Right.
And it takes an hour.
Right.
2 minutes takes an hour. It shouldn't take an hour.
Okay, let me ask you this. The last 2 minutes of an NFL game takes an hour.
No, it doesn't. It takes a little over 2 minutes.
No, it doesn't, John. They have timeouts. They go to commercial. They go to, buddy, I love you. You'll make a point, and when you're wrong, you refuse to recede. And this one, you're wrong.
No, I'm
the,
not wrong.
The last 2 minutes of a football game, an NFL football game,
is a lot quicker than the last 2 minutes of an NBA game.
I say nay, nay. I think you're wrong.
Well, I think you're wrong. So there.
Well, we'll agree to disagree.
The heart and soul of Cardinals baseball. KMOX.
Well, John, the Democratic leader of the United States Senate took to the floor yesterday and shocked everyone of Chuck Schumer's, who I'm speaking about, highest ranking Jewish elected official from the United States, who took to the floor and says, look, there needs to be another election over in Israel and that they need to have a two-state solution. I think I totally agreed with him on the two-state solution, and I probably would like to see another election over in Israel. But who is he to be telling them that it's time to have an election?
Yeah, I think that was inappropriate. You know, we talked about this on with Debbie and Scott. But, as to the two-state solution, so one of the real impediments to that has been Hamas over the course of recent history. When President Obama, going back to President Clinton, have offered the two-state solution negotiations, it was the Palestinians who shot it down. So, I would not be, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other on a two-state solution. I would not want a terrorist government in place, but that's what was in place effectively in Gaza since 2006. So, but I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think it's a place of an American politician to call for an election in another country, and I wish Chuck Schumer hadn't done that. I understand that people, don't like Benjamin Netanyahu.
Right. But isn't it also a shift from an American perspective of at least this administration and the Democratic leaders, the Republican leaders, we've all been solidly behind Israel.
Oh, yeah.
And this is starting to see the first weakening of, hey, guys, it's time to land this plane and figure this out. That's the way I read this, that we're no longer going to be able to look the other way, that a lot of the complaints may be warranted.
Well, Here's the problem you have. Hamas is, has hidden themselves among hospitals and schools and, in the population. They have brutalized their own population in Gaza and in the West Bank, for that matter. And you've got to, they are genuinely a terrorist organization that inflicted massive pain and death and casualties on Israel back in October. I think Israel has every right to strike against that force and to try and, as best they can, to eliminate it. But that in the process of doing that, there's been a, you know, a loss of civilian life, you know, large scale loss. And then a lot of people find that distasteful.
Earlier this week, President Biden sewed up the nomination of the Democrats for re-election for president of the United States. The Trump nomination is just a couple of delegates away. We have to go through a couple more elections. But the reality is we know who these two folks are going to be. And when you have nominees, we haven't seen nominees, number one, this early in a political process. Ever. And when you have nominees, they take over their party's operations, the DNC and the RNC. Donald Trump swept in his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, to become the head of the RNC. Unbelievable, you know, the Trump family just, nobody seems to care that they're involved in everything, but whatever, has taken it over. I read an article earlier this week that one of the first actions was to scrap the early voting program that McDonnell, or however you say her name, Ronna McDaniel, had put in place. That it was going to save them money, and that the former president just doesn't believe in it. What's your thoughts on Trump and the RNC, and why are the Republicans continuing to put their head in the sand when it comes to early voting?
Well, he controls the National Committee, and the National Committee is made up of the state party chair in every state, and then there's a National Committee man and a National Committee woman from every state, and that essentially comprises the Republican National Committee, and the Trump loyalists have a clear majority there now. Here's the problem with what's happening with the RNC. Number one, the RNC's cash on hand is as low as it has ever been. The only thing in recent history was the Michael Steele era at the RNC, who was not a very good national party chairman. So you're dealing with a situation where there's not a lot of money there. They walked in a week ago, I guess, the new chairman was elected, Michael Whatley of North Carolina. And they walked in and immediately fired 90 people. They got rid of, you said they got rid of the absentee voting program, which is a mistake. And they got rid of their minority outreach effort that had been in place for quite some time. And the job of a national political party is to put boots on the ground in states and to make sure that the voter turnout is there. And, you know, an effective ground operation, as you know, it can make a couple, 3-point difference in the election outcome. The RNC is not going to be able to do that. The Democrats are putting real boots on the ground in states that matter, like Wisconsin. And, you know, this is the absentee voter program. Getting rid of that is going to cost us votes. Not having a ground game is going to cost us votes. All of this taken together is going to make it much more difficult to win the White House in November.
Yeah, and then let's not forget that President Trump has made these threats that if you weren't with him, he's only going to be supporting MAGA folks. The umbrella organizations of the RNC and the DNC, yes, their number one focus is to try to get control or retain control of the White House, but it's also to elect members of their own party, top to bottom, across the ballot. I think we all know Donald Trump well enough to know that he doesn't care about anybody other than what's going to happen to him.
Well, and I'm less concerned about the implications for Congress and the Senate because the Republicans, as the Democrats do, we've got a Republican National Congressional Committee and a Republican National Senatorial Committee. Both of those things are funded, and the members raise the money into them. Now, I think Mike Johnson is probably the least effective fundraising speaker that Republicans have ever produced. Mitch McConnell is very good at raising money. The Senate committee is going to have plenty of money. I think the House committee will have money. But the RNC's role really is the presidential race in the handful of states that matter. And the RNC just doesn't have those resources right now. And I don't see them getting there.
A lot of Americans, close to 170 million of them, have TikTok. Most of them probably younger. I don't personally participate in it. We talked a little bit about TikTok before, but what's the difference between a Chinese national company having control of a social media and an American? Just because they're born an American, you know, Elon Musk wasn't even born an American. He became an American. He controls an algorithm. How come we can sit here and say there is problems with China owning TikTok, But Elon Musk, go ahead, have all of our information and do your nuttiness.
Well, because it is China that's generating the, that's making the algorithm, that's feeding stuff to mostly our kids. And I am concerned about that. And I, you know, if a foreign adversary, and China is a foreign adversary, is feeding our kids a bunch of crap, that shouldn't be happening.
We're going to visit with Bob Clark from Clayco Construction. You've been paying attention to the saga that is the convention center. It's about $45 million short. He predicted this almost a year and a half ago that this would be the case. We're going to ask him what's S up, what's next. Bob Clark, after the news, right here on KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Happy Friday, St. Louis. It's Hancock and Kelly. John, we're going to stick around with everybody till almost 11 o'clock. We'll go till 10 o'clock right now, and then Amy and Chris will come in. Chris, that fossil. It was his birthday yesterday, you know.
Yeah, he had a happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, so they were calling him a dingus. I want to understand what a dingus is.
Well, I think it's a bird.
A bird?
I do.
That's a dodo bird, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a dingus.
That'd be applicable to him, too, a dodo bird, don't you think?
We like Ronj.
We do like the Ronj. You can also see Hancock and Kelly, the television show, on Fox 2 at 8:30 on Sunday mornings. We were hoping to visit with Bob Clark. I think he may have been delayed. He's going to join us in a minute, John. But look, we all know that this region needs a vibrant and operating convention center in downtown St. Louis.
Yep.
And, of course, we went through the process in the 90s of expanding it and putting up the dome. Helped us get the L.A. Rams to move to St. Louis before they quickly left again. We also benefit from the amount of conventioneers that come to St. Louis, wind up renting hotels and staying here, etc. But we're in competition against regions around us, Indianapolis and Nashville in particular, who's invested heavily and have this incredible convention center. And so there's this push in St. Louis to let's expand, let's make our convention center more welcoming, let's attract more people. And about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, there was a proposal to expand the convention center, add in places for the trucks to be able to deliver, as well as a new ballroom. Bob Clark, who is a developer here in St. Louis at the time, Clayco Construction, had said, hey, this is problematic. I don't think we're going to have the money and resources to be able to accomplish this. We ought to step back, take a couple deep breaths, and figure out a larger way to accomplish this with the resources that we have.
And what he was proposing was to develop the whole area, not just the convention center, but to actually put a whole lot of different types of venues in place at that location.
Yeah, and he also made the case that, hey, look, we don't have the amount of resources that are necessary post-COVID to be able to afford to be able to do this. Well, it turns out that he appears to be right. The convention center and the head of the convention center has been in front of the board of aldermen saying, hey, we need another $40 million to accomplish that which we've already agreed to have done here in downtown. They were going to expand a particular tax that would have thrown $2 more on hotels, etc. And guess what? That's against the rules, against the law as it relates to the state. And now the convention center seems to be in peril without the $40 million that it needs to get finished. And it just seems to be just another St. Louis story, does it not?
Well, it's a fiasco. It's been horrible. And look, we could put every bell and every whistle and every facility on that thing you want. That in and of itself isn't going to attract conventions to this city, given the city's reputation nationally. And, you know, we have a crime problem in St. Louis, and the crime problem infects everything. It infects our ability to retain population. It affects our ability to attract conventions and other things. And, you know, if you look at the city, you can make a case that the Cardinals and Ballpark Village have done a really good job of attracting people, and that's a success. But and I think what Bob O'Loughlin has done at Union Station
right.
has been a success.
But the Cardinals have done at Ballpark Village.
Yeah, certainly the soccer facility is a success. But that convention center has been an albatross for quite some time.
And this all comes on the heels, John, of what we have talked about, which is the decline in population in St. Louis. And when we say the St. Louis, we're not talking about just the St. Louis city.
It's region-wide.
We're talking about the entire region.
Yes.
And we have seen now Charlotte and Orlando move ahead of St. Louis in terms of size. And people kind of shrug and think, well, is that big of a deal? St. Louis County is the smallest it's ever been since the 1990s.
Yeah.
St. Louis City continues to shrink and evaporate. And you think, oh, well, that's great. We're not losing population. These are just people who are moving to St. Charles. And yes, in many instances, people are moving to St. Charles. But the real problem we have is most people we're seeing opt out of the region completely.
Well, you were just in Denver earlier this week. And, you know, I look at my two kids, one of whom lives in Chicago now, and the other's thankfully still in St. Louis. But the number of their peers from high school or even college who were from St. Louis who have moved to, and Denver's one of the places they moved, Nashville's another, Austin, Texas has attracted a lot of St. Louis young people, and you see talented young people leaving St. Louis, that's not a recipe for success long term.
Well, you're right, but what's interesting about the most recent numbers we're seeing in the LOXA population right now is it's not just young kids moving to chase opportunity in Austin or Nashville. We're seeing African-American families also bail on the region. And most of the public policy that's being discussed right now in this region is to deal with how do we deal with, minority populations who've been disadvantaged, et cetera. And the reality is, guess what? These folks are leaving.
They're leaving, yeah.
Which has taken us into a really bad spot. Joining us now on the Celebrity Guest Line is none other than Bob Clark. He's the president and CEO of Clayco Construction. Bob, thanks for taking a couple of minutes to visit with us here on KMOX.
Yep, great. Great to be with you guys.
Hey, so you had visited with us before. In fact, some people may say that you were Nostradamus in saying that the money that we were pouring into the convention center may not be well thought out. Guess what, Bob? Mm-hmm. We found out this week that they're $40 million short. They're not going to be able to have that money. I feel as though you predicted this.
I did predict it. I think the mayor was aware. I had a very lengthy conversation with the comptroller before they went ahead with the project. You know, I just was convinced and obviously accurate that they didn't have enough money to build the project. So now they've got kind of an incompetent team trying to figure out and scramble around how do they finish the project. They say they're $40 million over budget. I think they're way, way further over budget than that. And I think it's time that they really agree to some kind of a complete audit. We've been trying to get the records, and obviously they're stonewalling and that sort of thing. And because there's so many different agencies, it's really complex to figure out how to get the information. But I think this, either the state, really the mayor at this point, should even want to have a full audit to kind of figure out how are they going to clean this up so that it's not a complete disaster.
Bob, but we both agree, we all agree that the convention center is so important to us, and we've made these decisions to make these investments. It doesn't seem like there's any forethought or leadership happening here. How do we get to a place where a region's investing this amount of money, and it's this messed up?
You'd think the hotel people would be completely freaked out, but I don't understand. I don't see the hotel folks like screaming at the top of their lungs either to try to get a solution. I mean, why would Bob O'Loughlin not be like, I mean, their hotel rooms are not going to be full because the convention center is going to lose conventions, not get conventions with an unfinished expansion. I mean, the project was honestly ill-fated from the beginning because it never really added like additional convention space. You know, it was originally going to have a ballroom. I think they had to cut the ballroom out. They've only added 50,000 square feet of additional floor. And so for the, you know, $300-400 million they're investing, they're really getting, you know, covering the dock doors. I mean, it's really a shame. And they're also, you know, another thing, you just saw President Biden and the infrastructure thing talk about taking these massive highways down that have cut neighborhoods in half. The convention center actually completely cuts the neighborhood to the north off from downtown. And this current expansion is further to the west. So it's doing exactly what the infrastructure bill is trying to reverse, which is cutting people off from their downtown neighborhoods. I mean, the project is a disaster, so I don't know how they fix it.
So what's ultimately going on here, Bob? I mean, you are a person who is building incredible buildings, convention centers all over the country. You have been vocal. You have a huge business in St. Louis. What is happening in that there seems to be no cohesion, no leadership. How do we get out of this problem that we find ourselves in?
Yeah, it's a big problem. I think, you have to start with safety. You know, at Clayco and Alberici, McCarthy, the great construction companies that are in St. Louis, we start almost every meeting talking about safety. Because, you know, in Clayco's case, we have 27,000 people working on our job sites every day. And our highest priority is to make sure that no one gets hurt and everybody goes home safe. So we start all of our meetings talking about safety. And I know the other great companies in St. Louis do the same thing. And what I think all the politicians, Sam Page, Tashara Jones, we have 80 municipalities. So it'd be great if all 80 of them did this, but that's a whole other subject. But I think if they should start every meeting talking about community safety, because people don't feel safe in St. Louis. So the convention center is a big problem, but it's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem my employees face is there's people flying down the highways. There's people without license plates on their cars. Nobody's getting pulled over. Cars are getting stolen out of every shopping center parking lot. There's carjackings. There's a lack of economic development in the neighborhoods where they're really required. You know, we just tried to build a massive project at Goodfellow and Highway 70 and the city. I mean, I can't even understand what's happening. But they went around saying it was going to be polluting and, you know, they were just dishonest about the whole thing. But here they had an economic development opportunity and they turned it away for what reasons we're not sure. But, you know, we got to start with safety. We have to get the community to focus on. The new chief of police is a great guy. He's got a great plan. We need more police officers. We need more funding. We need to reverse this kind of far left concept that we don't have to have deterrence to violent crime in our community. We have to prosecute. I think Gabe Gore is doing a great job of turning that office around. But across the whole St. Louis community, we have to have this incredible core focus on safety.
Agreed. Our guest has been Bob Clark. He's the chairman of Clayco here in St. Louis, kind enough to join us talking about the fiasco that is the convention center expansion and a lot of the ills that beset St. Louis in this region. Bob, thanks so much for your time. We'll catch you down the road. When we come back, Michael.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, when we come back, we're going to chat for a little bit, and then we've got some St. Patrick's Day celebrants.
The Irish are here. I hope they brought some alcohol.
That's next on KOX.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity. HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, the former president of the United States continues to deal with his indictments, his problems all around the country. And the most recent one that he's dealing with is in Georgia with Fannie Willis. Of course, that's the election,
Georgia election case.
Yeah, the Georgia election case that was brought forward. Fannie Willis had brought in a special prosecutor. It then comes out later that she had a special relationship or had an intimate relationship with the person. They were going on vacations together. She was paying him under that. And she put in jeopardy this whole issue as it relates to Donald Trump. My particular problem with it, John, is it really has nothing to do with Donald Trump. And this could be thrown out because of some idiotic move this prosecutor made. That could have been the case. This morning, the judge ruled and said that Fonnie Willis can stay, but the special prosecutor has to go.
Yeah, I think, in other words, she and her paramour, Mr. Wade, who has been the acting prosecutor in the case, cannot both be on this case because of the appearance of impropriety, said Judge Scott McAfee this morning. But he does allow Fonnie Willis to continue to prosecute this case. I think she's done massive damage to the case in Georgia.
Well, and what's horrible is that it's taken the focus off of what is. I mean, we all saw it with our own eyes. The governor of Georgia himself, a Republican, is one of the witnesses in this who has said all along that Donald Trump was trying to violate the law. And to take such a good case, one of such importance, and to put it in jeopardy over this kind of stuff is just crazy. And then on top of it all, she lied. Doesn't that sound familiar? We've had prosecutors right here in the city of St. Louis lie, and it caused them to be removed from office.
Yeah, this is bad. And I'm not convinced this was the strongest case to begin with. She brought a RICO case here, basically saying that there was at least 18 or 19 member conspiracy. Could she win a conviction under a RICO statute? I mean, she got two or three folks to plead guilty to lesser charges to date. But RICO cases are not easily proven. And I feel like she's done a real disservice to her cause for justice here. And I will be surprised at this point if anything of substance comes from this trial down the road.
Well, I hope you're wrong about that, because there's quite a bit of substance there.
The case that has the most merit that Donald Trump's involved with, in my opinion, is the documents case down in Mar-a-Lago.
Well, sure.
I think that is a clean, cold, the statute is clear. We know much of what happened, the documents being moved from place to place to hide them from investigators that were coming. That case, to me, is rock solid cold.
But how can you say that? I mean, he was pretty specific in the case here. I need 11,159 votes, and that's what I need to have. And he's calling
crime?
The governor. He's calling the Speaker of the House. He's trying to force this through. It's something that should be adjudicated. And rather than talking about the fact that he needed 11,100-something thousand votes and he was going to push all the pressure on it, we're talking about some stupid Beverly Hills Housewives relationship nonsense.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, I don't know that the phone call with Raffensperger is, I don't consider that a smoking gun. I know a lot of people do. But just the mere act of saying, hey, man, I need 11,000 more votes here. No action was taken because of that statement. I don't know that that is per se a crime, that phone conversation.
So my favorite holiday of the year is coming up. Why? Because it's my heritage. That's the St. Patrick's Day, John
Hancock.
Oh, we
got the whole
Irish
crew.
Which is going to be on Sunday.
James O'Sullivan.
We got half Ireland in our studio waiting to come in here and talk to us. I'm telling you, I wish all of our guests would come this prepared with this many people.
We got Patrick O'Donovan. He's a member of the Irish Parliament. He's going to join us next. Mo McGlynn is in as well, and a cast of thousands to talk about St. Patrick's Day coming up this weekend, coming up next on KMOX.
This is the best part of Ireland, the music and the drinks and the people.
I've never been there. You've been there multiple.
Yes.
Your people hail from Ireland.
Yes. Well, I mean, all of God's greatest creatures do.
Uh-huh.
There's no prettier place on the planet than Ireland.
We're celebrating Ireland this
weekend. We are celebrating Ireland. St. Patrick's Day is on Sunday. You got big parade here on Saturday. You got one on Sunday. You got a run. But in studio right now with us is Maureen Glenn. We call her Mo. Mo is the head of the St. Patrick's Day parade here in downtown St. Louis.
More importantly, the daughter of Joe McGlynn, who's been the parade organizer since the late 1800s.
Something like that,
and,
yes.
So you've taken over the mantle, Mo.
I think I was handed it forcibly.
Yeah. Well, you tell your dad that we said hello.
I will.
He's probably listening to us right now.
I'm confident that he is.
And we also have in studio the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of the Irish Language, Gaelic, Patrick O'Donovan, who's joining us in studio. Hello there, Mr. Minister.
Hi, how are you?
Is that how you get referred to, as Mr. Minister?
Among other things, some mightn't be as quite as flattering as that, but yeah.
Absolutely. And what part of Ireland are you from?
I'm from the southwest of Ireland, so I'm from a very rural place, a county called Limerick. Most people in the United States will have heard, I'm sure, of the River Shannon. It's basically where the River Shannon meets the sea. It's probably the most beautiful part of Ireland, even though you're right, Ireland is the most beautiful country in the world.
It is.
And I'm from the most beautiful part of the most beautiful country in the world.
I could listen to this guy all day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he is the Minister of Public Works. What is the Minister of Public Works?
So we build things for the government and for the public. We build offices, we build police stations, we build bridges, we build roads, we build houses, and we also look after Ireland's heritage. So if you've been to Ireland and you've been to somewhere like the Rock of Cashel or the Blasket Islands, or Dublin Castle or Kilmainham Jail, then we look after those.
I've been to all those places, John.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And here we got the guy that's
I got the guy who's in charge of it and who also is in charge of the language, which is called Gaelic. And my understanding is some schools still teach Gaelic in Ireland?
All schools do.
All schools?
All primary schools teach it. So every child attending an Irish primary school, it's our first language. It's our national language. It's a very important language. It's a very ancient language. But, you know, it has regressed a lot with the anglicisation of Ireland over a period of time when we didn't have our own independence. But it's now going through a revival. And predominantly the people who speak Irish on a day-to-day basis live on the west coast and the south coast of Ireland. And, you know, our last census, we saw a turnaround in the amount of people who can actually speak Irish fluently and who can speak Irish with confidence. So it's a really important, integral part of our culture. It's what differentiates us from other English-speaking countries, really, to be honest.
Well, and the Irish have such a history here in St. Louis, and the McGlynns have helped carry on that tradition. And one of the things we do is we celebrate on the Saturday before St. Patrick's Day. Sometimes it falls on St. Patrick's Day. We have the parade here in downtown St. Louis.
Yeah.
Mo, tell us what we got going this year.
This is going to be amazing. We start off with a 5-mile run or a 3K at 9 a.m. And at noon, the parade steps off from 20th and Market, walking east toward the arch. We will have big helium balloons. We'll have 8 or 10 bands. We have Irish dance schools, clowns, you name it. We would invite everybody to come on down.
And so you, Mr. O'Donovan, are going to be the Grand Marshal? Is that how this works?
Well, the Irish government over the last 20, 30 years have sent all of the ministers, all members of the Irish government go abroad for St. Patrick's Day. Uh-huh. And look, there's no other country in the world that gets the universal acclaim that we do. Like, I mean, I don't think that the Belgians or the Danes or the Finns or the Swedes get what we get all over the world. So from last weekend to next weekend, from Wellington in New Zealand to Vancouver in Canada, from Chile to right up into the Baltics, there will be Irish government ministers representing Ireland, Irish values, and the people of Ireland. In basically forging new links, in celebrating our heritage, and as well as that, in encouraging people to visit and invest in Ireland. So over the next couple of days, while I'm in the state of Missouri, it'll be an opportunity for me, first and foremost, here in St. Louis, and then latterly I go on to Kansas City, to meet with civic, commercial, political, cultural leaders here and to tell a story.
Well, that's great. And we're delighted to have you. And Michael and I professionally do politics. That's what we do for a living.
So I heard.
And so I wanted to ask you, because I know the whole Brexit thing has been a fiasco, particularly in Ireland and with Northern Ireland. How are things adjusting?
Well, it's been a fiasco for the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And not for Ireland. I mean, we are now the only English-speaking country in the European Union with a population of over 500 million people. And from start to finish, look, it was a very complex, a binary decision that was put before the people of the United Kingdom, and they decided to leave. But when they decided to leave, they wanted to extricate Northern Ireland out with them, which was, you know, Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. However, the Good Friday Agreement, which was the agreement that basically in 1998 set the foundation stones for peace on the island of Ireland, made sure that we couldn't have a hard border ever again on the island of Ireland. So no customs, no checks, no anything like that. And all political representatives on Capitol Hill and US government representatives in both parties were very clear that there could be no return to a hard border on the island of Ireland. And were it not for the support that we got from the United States, from congressmen, senators, from right across the union, from the administration, we would not have the situation that we have now, which is a Windsor framework, which basically gives Northern Ireland the best of both worlds. So they've left the European Union technically, but they're in the European Union for trade purposes. And that means no hard border on the island of Ireland. And by the way, I suppose I should say the Irish economy is fastest growing economy in the European Union at the moment. It has been for a number of years. So we've turned a very serious corner. And then we look at some of our neighbours that are not too far away from economic recession. And, you know, there's no doubt about it that the European Union has been the main driving force in our economic development. And for countries to leave it, which is their entitlement, really is a circle that we find hard to square in Ireland, why you would want to leave something that has been so successful.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And here is your first trip to St. Louis?
First trip to St. Louis, but has been to the United States on multiple occasions. Have the same as every other person in Ireland, a lot of family in the United States, from New York to Chicago to California. So, look, it's always feels like coming to the 33rd county of Ireland when you go to the United States.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And you have been a minister there for how many years?
So I've been in Parliament in, we call it the Dáil, Dáil Éireann, since 2011, and I've been a minister since 2016.
The Irish, of course, I think there's 90 million Americans of Irish descent in the United States. Is there any other country that has that large a percentage of Irish immigrants that left the way that...
I presume tomorrow, 330 million
there
people...
There you go, right? Exactly.
Descent. Look, I mean, we... Through what happened in Ireland, and actually it's nothing dissimilar to, for instance, what's happening in Ukraine at the moment. When you try and eradicate a country's language, their religion, when you take their land off of them, when you starve them, you know, you're left with almost like opening a bag of feathers. So we are all over the world. We're from Argentina to New Zealand. So you'll find Irish people at every four crossroads all over the world. And that is a mark of our heritage, and it's a mark of our history, and it's a mark of how poorly governed we were for centuries.
I have a friend of mine who travels the world, who's been everywhere, Asia, you know, Africa, etc. They said there is one thing you can count on in every city
you
in the world.
Irish person.
Was an Irish pub.
Yeah.
As an Irish pub. And it was a touchstone for so many people you go to an Irish pub and you can kind of get in touch with the community.
It was. And back in the 1940s and 50s, when my uncles came to America, the Irish pub was a place where unskilled, poorly educated Irishmen got jobs on building sites. And it's where they met the Gaelic Athletic Association. You mentioned hurling a while ago and football. It's where they met their next generation of friends. Like, they came on one-way tickets. They never went home.
Yeah, we were talking about Gaelic off the aisle. We're not going to have time to get into it, but those of you at home, or don't do it while you're in your car, Google the game of hurling. I'm telling you, it's crazy. It's like...
That's what you usually do on Saturday night.
Exactly. But it's like baseball while they're playing soccer and they're swinging the bats.
What's going on?
It's really
hurling.
Crazy.
Explain hurling.
Well, hurling is 15 players against 15 players. It's one of the oldest, best field sports in the world. It's also the fastest. My county, Limerick, is currently the champions for
the
world.
Champions of the world.
Well, we don't call them champions. We could call them champions of the world.
Oh, yeah,
maybe.
They're champions. Yeah. We got,
so we're going for five in a row.
There's nobody over here that's
going
to hurl with you guys. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely not. No, no. Huh. So, but it is worth YouTubing.
Yeah, it's worth taking a YouTube. Before you go, we're running short on time.
I want to hear about hurling.
Wait, buddy, maybe we can stick around for one more segment about hurling. But we got to get all the stuff what's happening with the fact that there's a parade in downtown St. Louis and a lot of people want to participate.
They do. Go ahead, Mo.
Well, there's a parade tomorrow, Saturday.
Right. What time?
Downtown, at noon downtown.
Noon, and 9 o'clock is the 5-mile run.
Absolutely.
You
can register for the run right up until 9:01 if so choose, at Busch Stadium.
Okay.
And the run begins at Broadway and Spruce. You can choose 5 miles or the 3K, which is 1.3 miles.
Oh.
There are Anheuser-Busch products served at the end.
Uh-huh.
Because it is, after all, the Michelob Light run.
Walk a mile and have some beer. I might be up for this.
Absolutely. And we welcome out. It's going to be a beautiful day tomorrow. The sun will be out and everybody should come down for the parade.
Minister, why does the Guinness taste better in Ireland than it does in the United States?
Very simply because you have to go there to drink it.
Yeah.
So it's a sneaky ply by the Irish to get Americans to travel to Dublin and to Ireland and to Limerick and to the place that I'm from, Newcastle West, the best town in the best county, in the best country in the world.
And wow. Ireland, you all put nitrogen in as a result to make the, am I right? To make
it's blanketed under nitrogen, but it just, I suppose it's like some people, it doesn't travel that well, so mm-hmm. you have to go to the source of it.
Yeah, there's nothing better than a glass over in Ireland, Hancock.
It's also how you pour it.
Even your English blood would understand how good tasting that deliciousness is.
I love the Irish. I've been sitting here with you for all these years.
Well, you've been oppressing us for so long. Now you've the shoes on the other foot.
Apparently that's the case. It was delightful to meet you.
And you too.
Welcome to St. Louis. That is Patrick O'Donovan, the Minister of Hurling. I'm just kidding. And Mo McGlynn, who has taken over the leadership of the St. Patrick's Day festivities in downtown St. Louis. Folks, enjoy yourselves on St. Patty's Day, and thanks so much
for
your visit. We'll be back to wrap it up after this on KMOX.
No fights, just insights. Talking politics with respect for all. This is KMOX.
Is that our new catchphrase? No fights, just respect for all.
That's what we love everybody over.
Yeah.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I think you and I have a relationship built on fighting with each other, though.
Well, that's an excellent point. But it's hard not to fight when your partner's wrong so often.
Well, and when you put up a 90... count indicted felon for president from your party, it's easy to fight with you.
He's got almost one count for every year Joe Biden's been alive.
That was a good one.
I tell you what, this choice that all of us are going to have, it looks like, come November is, I don't know, man. You would think we could do better than that. I'd have run old O'Donovan over here, the Minister of Public Works.
Good-looking young guy. 47 years old, about my age. Looked like he was about 12. Looked like he was working on his merit badge.
Building stuff. And you know what was fascinating to me? Because, we are known here in St. Louis for Highway 45.
Uh-huh.
And that comes from the Irish.
Yes.
I did not know that. That
exactly.
That hard O thing.
Well, he was excited, and so was Maureen Glenn, because they were going They were going over to City Hall for the first time in history. They're going to raise an Irish flag over
Mayor Tishara O'Jones.
Tishara O'Jones. Now, it's hard to believe Vince Shamel never did that, but I know he was a big Irishman, and he helped the Sister City program and all that stuff. So it will be exciting to see the Irish flag fly over City Hall.
When you've been in Ireland, did you go to Limerick, where he's from?
I think so. So I went everywhere. We did both times I've been on trips all around the country. We were in buses. A small bus with just family, et cetera.
Well, and the land size is not that big, right?
No, it's like a little bit bigger than the state of Missouri.
Right. Uh-huh.
So in the 9 or 10 days that you're there, you kind of circle the whole island. I've been to Northern Ireland. I was there prior to the Brexit nonsense.
Right.
And I've been, of course, to the Ring of Kerry there on the West Coast and then down towards Dublin and around. You can't really describe Ireland to someone. I can tell you that you've never seen so much green in your life, and you're like, oh, yeah, of course, you would expect that.
There's a lot of green.
But the amount of shades of green are unbelievable. The people are what makes the place. It's surely not the food.
Yeah.
The food is terrible.
Is that right?
It's absolutely horrid. The beer is delicious. The people are great. And the one big takeaway that I have, that if you go there, you'd be like, there are more sheep on the island of Ireland there, and there are people. There is nowhere you go once you get outside of Dublin.
You can't even get a good lamb chop in the place.
No, you can get it, but they boil it. I mean, cooking is not an Irish
thing. It seems to me like if you opened up a good restaurant in Ireland, you could make a lot of money, Michael.
I don't know. Do you ever find that, like, restaurants, even here, they all kind of have the same thing?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we have Italian restaurants, Chinese restaurants, but you go to an American restaurant, they all have the same thing. I felt like every restaurant in Ireland was serving the same thing. Now, look, I'm as Irish as they come, so, it's probably not PC for me to be poo-pooing the food, but it's terrible.
Well, that's good. And that's good intel.
I put it right there with the bagpipes.
It's Michael Kelly. Chris and Amy are up next. The news is before that right here on KMOX.